it's smarter to take 100 grand and put 25 grand in four deals across different operators and possibly the different asset classes. So you can start to learn and see how those dollars can generate different benefits for you in different environments, essentially.
If you're a residential real estate agent earning $200,000 a year and you want to grow your passive income, this show's for you. Learn the secrets other agents use and hear from experts in our field in order to guide you along your journey to investing in assets like apartment communities so that you can turn your commissions into cash flow. I'm Randall McLeard. Let's go, baby. All right. Welcome back to Agents Building Cash Flow. I'm your host, Randall McLeard. It's great to have you here today. I am joined by Randy Smith, and he is a podcast host on a show called The Gentle Art of Crushing It, which is a very cool name. He is a passive real estate investor, and he is, I would say, a capital allocator, because what he does is he raises capital and deploys that capital into operators' deals who have a strong track record. And so he partners with them to bring capital to the deals. And we talk about that today. He has a sales background where he is a high income earner in the sales industry, various different roles that he played, ended up getting laid off and then getting into real estate full time after having passively invested. And so luckily through his passive investments, he was able to bridge the gap on the income he was earning through the passive checks he was getting. And so we go into that and talk about that. And he has a very interesting story, and he's raised and deployed, I think, is over $4 million into multifamily and various asset classes. So a wealth of knowledge, really interesting conversation. We just kind of go and talk. So we talk a bit of shop. So if some terms don't make sense to you, by all means, reach out and let me know. You can reach me at rm@ridgelineig.com. I'm happy to chat with you and cover any of the topics that we discuss on the show. And without further ado, let's bring him on. Welcome to the show, Randy Smith. I wanted to dive in and just ask you, I did a quick bit of research on you, and you went from sales professional to, it looked like 3 million something in your first year. Is that right? I mean, can you tell me about that?
Okay.
And where I saw that was on Whitney's podcast.
Yeah.
Whitney Sewell's podcast. It was like a highlight. Tell me, I guess, the sales professional to real estate story.
Got it. Yeah. So I was, and first of all, thanks for having me on the show. Really excited to be with the fellow Randall as well. So
yeah, great name.
Good to meet you. Good to be chatting with you in the audience here. So yeah, I was a sales guy for 25 years, various Fortune 100, Fortune 200 roles, chasing people around the stack rank, go to bed a zero or hero, wake up a zero type of thing for years. And always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to get into real estate at some point, because as we all know, most people that have any amount of wealth found so or decided to put capital in real estate because it's just one of the greatest places in the world to grow and maintain wealth. So let's see, it's probably about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, when I finally pulled the trigger and actually jumped into the space. I had got my house in order financially and stopped living outside of my means and decided to start investing in real estate, and bought some single family homes in Kansas City. Then I bought some single family homes in Atlanta and found out very, very quickly that I did not want to be an active single family investor. And I moved over to the passive investing side and jumped into that kind of all in and really pursued that for a couple of years up until last year, when I got laid off from the W-2 once again. And fortunately, the majority of my household expenses were covered by my passive income. So I didn't have to run out and find another job like so many others do in that situation. The power of real estate really had already started to work really, really well in my life. So that put me in a position where I got to decide really what I wanted to do with this next phase in my life, and decided to jump in and help traditional investors find this passive investing space. And that's when I launched Impact Equity and started raising capital for a couple of the operators that I work with. And now we've raised, call it $4 million from 55 different investors. And our goal is to try to double that capital every 2 to 5 years. So that's kind of where we're at today.
That is a solid story. Yeah. When you first mentioned that you jumped in full time, I was wondering if you quit or stopped your job. This was recent, right? So you were still working your W-2, buying and investing passively into other syndications or funds, or what were you really investing in?
Yeah. So after I got out of the single family space, I started that journey of like, how do I do this bigger, faster, with more expertise and more professionalism, not just Randy trying to figure out how to make money in real estate. I very quickly found that syndication model where syndicators bring together groups of investors and they use that capital to buy much, much bigger assets and deploy much, much better, more professional, more effective resources at managing those assets. And ultimately, that leads to better returns. And the passive investor gets all of the benefits of investing in real estate, but they don't have to get their hands dirty and they can rely on experts doing what experts do, is perform at a very high level.
Yeah. So again, when you were investing, I guess when you said you got laid off, was your income or your passive income coming in from your single family stuff, or your investments into the multifamily asset classes had been producing cash flow that you could actually take as distributions, or both maybe?
Yeah. So a little of both, actually.
Okay.
When I got laid off, I actually had all of my single family homes on the market to be sold. And I sold those within 30 days of getting laid off. And that created, well, I had this huge bucket of cash that I needed to deploy. And at that point, I think I was invested in 12 or 13 passive syndication deals and multifamily and mobile home parks. Actually, at that time, it was just multifamily and mobile home parks. And I was getting either monthly or quarterly distributions on all of those passive investments already. So the day I get laid off, I have 13 to 15 checks a month coming in the mail, getting deposited into the bank. And I also had, I don't know, $350,000, $400,000 come in from selling all of these assets that I then deployed into other investments as well.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
So it's kind of a combination of the two.
Yeah. So I was just wondering how far along in the syndication investments you were. So sounds like you already went into a number of them. And so you started in multifamily or in the mobile homes? Which one did you start with?
So my very first one was a mobile home fund through a very large brand, a guy who's got another podcast or was on a podcast, very large personality in the space. I will just say that. And I chose him because he was a large brand with a big beard. That might mean something to some of your listeners. I chose him because it was a trusted brand that I knew, liked, and trust already. And I assumed that if I put money with him, it would be much more difficult for him to fail than some small mom and pop guy because he had a network, such a reach already. So yeah, started a mobile home and then very quickly moved over into multifamily. And oddly enough, from a timing standpoint, when all of these houses were selling and I was getting laid off, I actually had my first multifamily syndication go full cycle in just 14 months and almost doubled my money during that time period as well. So it was really, there was a few months there where there was a lot of dollars flying around from all the transactions and all of that as well.
Yeah, sounds like it. That's a fantastic IRR boost when you can get it, you know, a 14 month full cycle deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The heydays, I'm curious where those are going now as far as the turnaround times. We're getting into the more five-year traditional style of hold. So one of the things we talk about a lot on this show is like vetting a sponsor, and you just spoke to that. And so without really going into detail on it, but I wanted to highlight it because it's a big thing, finding a sponsor who has the experience and the track record. They've gone full cycle. They're well-known, that sort of thing. So anybody listening to the show, you can go back and listen to the early episodes. I have 50 questions you can ask a sponsor to really dive in and figure out if you want to work with them. So
yeah,
sounds like you did your due diligence. You already knew, like, and trusted the person. Okay. So you did the mobile home park, and are you still invested in that fund? Or are you doing?
I am. Yeah. So I think almost 3 years into that deal. We saw a little bit of a dip in distributions in the Q4 distribution, likely due to cash flow because of the lending market and the way that those floating rate loans are maturing.
Yeah.
So we did see that dip slightly, but up to this point, it's been very positive.
Yeah. So are you maybe 50-50 in your mobile home to multifamily, or which asset class are you most excited about?
Yeah. So I have about 80% of my money in multifamily, and then I split pretty equally between mobile home, self-storage, an ATM fund.
Okay.
And then I'm also starting to play in short-term rental space and also in light industrial and actually a car wash too. So yes, all kinds of different things. Yeah.
A lot of things going on. Yeah. Are you the lead on some of these deals?
I'm not the lead on any of these deals. So I like to put my money with experts. And if anything, I'm an expert at that is vetting operators, but certainly not operating these entities at all. So
yep.
I put my money with the good jockeys is what I do.
Yeah. A good capital allocator.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. Car wash. There was one that came up for sale just recently down the street from me and I started looking at it. And then like two or three came up for sale, like car washes that I had just seen around town.
Yeah.
And I was like, is something going on in the car wash business? What is happening here?
Yeah. And I think there is. There's a ton of money that's flowing into that market space right now. A lot of syndicators are getting into car washes as well because it's a fairly simple business model.
Yeah.
And the cap rates are unbelievable. It's kind of untapped at this point. And there's a really big private equity play on the back end where private equity has an appetite to pick those up in large volume at this point. So yeah, I think we'll see more of it.
Yeah, create like a portfolio and then sell it off to PE firm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's an interesting model.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll dig deeper into those three.
Yeah.
I think something happened. They didn't have a sign up and somebody got into an altercation. So they had to file bankruptcy. I think it was the whole story I got from the guys working on it.
Oh, no kidding.
It's like, okay, it's down the street from me. I need a car wash all the time. I'd be the best guy.
Yeah. It's like, no, I agree. And I love the space. I think it's not labor intensive. Maybe you've got a guy that's going around cleaning things up and worst case scenario, you got somebody sitting in a booth. But with the technology that's available today, most of those are run without any manpower at all. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like self-storage, quite frankly. You put the technology in place and there's not a lot to running that business. It runs itself other than keeping some eyes on it once or twice a week to empty trash cans and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot to it. So,
yeah, this one's fully automated. That would be the play.
Yeah.
Well, very interesting. We could dig into that and talk shop all day, but I'm curious what you tell, because I know you have your own podcast and I know that you speak to investors on how to get into the space. So what are some things that you teach and what are maybe some of the best practices, I guess, for a limited partner looking at deals? What would you say?
Yeah, gosh, that's a really good question. And probably that's something I should give some more thought to. I really focus on teaching that first time passive investor, somebody who's, and we mentioned this earlier, like my avatar is a prior version of me. So a guy who is high income W-2 sales guy performing at a very high level, is very, very skilled at what he does in that role and knows that there's something else that he should be doing with his money, but doesn't necessarily have the time, doesn't necessarily have the expertise, and doesn't have the resources to allocate towards that. Because every minute you take away from a high-performing salesperson's time in front of their clients, you're taking money out of their pocket, quite frankly. So what I try to do is just teach at a very, very high level the basics and the fundamentals of what passive investing is, what the benefits are, and then some of those strategies about vetting operators, vetting deals, vetting markets, and vetting asset classes to make sure that you're matching all of the benefits that you're getting from your investment to what it is you're actually trying to achieve. And I was in a unique situation where I was making like very good money in my sales job. And quite frankly, I didn't want to earn any more money because I didn't want to pay any more taxes. So really, I was just trying to grow this bucket on the side. So I was not concerned about monthly distributions or quarterly distributions, or quite frankly, even the tax benefits of that earned income. I just wanted to grow that bucket to someday be able to step away from corporate America. So that's a very different strategy than somebody who doesn't have a job, who's trying to live on the earnings that they're getting from their passive income. So most people are focused on teaching people how to generate monthly income out of it. And I wanted to do something very different. So I'm trying to talk to those folks that, like, if you're making really, really good money and you want to keep making good money, become work optional, then there are very specific strategies where you can grow that wealth faster on the side. So you have options in the future when you don't necessarily want to be working in that W-2 or that profession, whatever it is. So We talk about a lot about those type of strategies, spreading your money around different deals, gaining diversification, and making sure you don't have too much exposure to any one asset market, asset class, operator, or deal for that matter.
Yeah.
And something that's not really intuitive, people will come, and something I hear all the time is like, Randy, we worked together for years and years. I got 100 grand. I'll give it to you. What do you want me to do? And like, it would be very easy to say, take that 100 grand and put it in my current deal. But really, I think it's smarter to take 100 grand and put 25 grand in four deals across different operators and possibly the different asset classes, just so you can start to learn and see how those dollars can generate different benefits for you in different environments, essentially. So,
yeah, for sure. Have you looked at setting up a fund by any chance?
I have. I actually leverage a type of a fund with two of my operators. I do single asset funds. I don't do open blind funds. And the reason for that is being newer to this space, I thought it would be a difficult conversation to say, trust me, give me 100 grand. I'm going to go find a good spot for it. It's much easier for me to say, here is a fantastic deal, and here's an outstanding operator that I've already selected. I'm leaning on their expertise and their track record to sell the deal, which takes less of the onus off of me, quite frankly.
Yeah, for sure. And that is the model that I looked at. But on the fund side, it was really setting up a large pool, having your, look, this is our structure for the sponsors that we're going to target. These are the markets we're going to target.
Yep.
And that's all we're going after. The sponsor has to have so many full cycle deals. They've been in the business for up and down cycles, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And so I'm just curious, going forward, if that's on the agenda for you, if you are looking to, instead of doing a single asset fund, looking to just create a fund that's more geared towards you being able to really become a capital allocator, where you're putting, you're finding the deal and the money's already there and you're ready to deploy it.
Yeah. And I think that is a path I will go down once I have track record as a capital raiser and a capital allocator.
Yeah.
Today, I have my experience investing in 20 plus deals, and I have my experience with very specific operators. But yes, as I get more experience, I think it's a more viable option once I have a year, 2 years, 3 years under my belt doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great model.
Yeah.
And it helps your investors be diversified across those assets, especially if you're already talking to these people and you know the operators to use and that sort of thing. So
yeah,
we can chat about that another time as well.
Sure.
But it's something I like geeking out. I had a SEC attorney on the other day and we were talking about it and just the different types of funds to structure. And what I've been seeing now lately, a lot of operators are going, or funds are moving to like a debt fund or an income fund, depending on how you look at it, where it's a flat 10% sort of pref, no upside.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting. So on that point, since you talked to so many sponsors, what are you seeing right now in offerings? Like, what is the typical thing an LP would be looking at as far as a return profile in multifamily? I mean, I'm just curious about all the different asset classes that you are familiar with. Mm-hmm. And maybe that would help some listeners know the types of returns they could either expect or like what that industry is providing right now in this current market.
Yeah. And certainly I'm not advertising anything right now.
Yeah.
And I joke about this a little bit. I feel like somewhere somebody sold that had 15 to 17% IRR, 3 to 6% cash on cash year one, double your money in 2 to 5 years. I think somebody sold a deck for $20 that had that offering on it.
Everybody.
But that's a pretty common offering you see out there. 15 to 17% IRR, around a 2x equity multiple, call it 20% average annual return in 5 years, right?
Yeah.
And that seems to be pretty common. Where you start to see differences is you'll see, more often than not, I'm seeing 7 prefs or 8 prefs, usually a 70-30 split on that first waterfall. And then going into the second waterfall, maybe you see an 80-20, or you might even see a 50-50. Like, you see those things change quite a bit. And I think that's the spot where it's important to watch, because I think the goal is that operators should be creating structures that align their interest with their operators, which everybody knows that. But it's in those waterfalls, I think, where you can really differentiate whether they're doing that or not.
Yeah.
There are some operators, and it's baffling to me, that they will offer just a flat pref and you get half of it on the front end, half on the back end, and then there's really no share on the upside. Like the investor is taking all of the risk and the operator is getting the majority of the upside. And I think that could make sense for somebody who's retired and has millions in the bank and just needs an 8% return. But for the person who's trying to grow their wealth, I don't think that's aligned with that type of investor's interest at all.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
But again, that's just my opinion. Yeah.
We're proud to be sponsored by Ridgeline Investment Group. Ridgeline has a track record of transacting more than $53 million in assets throughout Texas. Ridgeline's currently looking to acquire 100 to 200 unit Class B multifamily communities between 5 and 20 million in San Antonio, Temple, Waco, Tyler, and other Texas secondary markets. To learn more about Ridgeline Investment Group, visit www.ridgelineig.com. Yeah, I've seen that. And so I guess touching a little bit of the different asset classes. So you're seeing very similar return profiles for a car wash or for like an ATM business. I don't know the metrics on those things, but just kind of curious.
Yeah. So ATM, very, very different. It's and actually there's these new structures that you're seeing where the target is to 2x your money or 1.7x your money, and then you're out.
Okay.
You get no additional upside.
Yeah.
Basically, they hold onto your money until they can hit that return. You're going to generally see higher cash on cash return. Like using multifamily is, because it is my base, multifamily is going to generally have lower cash on cash throughout the hold. Self-storage will be slightly higher year one and throughout the hold. Return profile about the same, though, on a five-year performa is what I'm seeing. When you get into car washes, ATMs, certainly higher cash on cash return, but that same kind of double your money. So double your money in 5 years. So the IRR ends up being smaller on those because there's less upside on the back end, if that makes sense.
Yeah. More cash flow, less wealth generation type deal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or appreciation on the asset, maybe.
Yep.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've definitely looked at all of those and just curious what you were seeing in the market. So, well, I want to touch on, again, we have a lot of listeners that are real estate professionals. We're doing a series right now on top producing agents from around the world who, and they're talking about what they do and how agents that listen can grow their active income so they can make more investments passively, right? So do you have any advice, again, getting back to, you target very similar type of an avatar just on the sales side, not really just niching down into the real estate sales side, but what is your like path to getting into a deal? Like, what are you raising the money from them and then putting into the deal? Or like, what are you saying you guys should do first and foremost?
Yeah. So talking specifically to your audience, they're in like the unicorn situation where they're high income earners. Hopefully they're high income earners if they're high performing salespeople in this space.
Yeah.
They're also real estate professionals just by definition. So that truly is like the unicorn situation where you can have passive losses applying to your active income, creating the most significant tax advantages of anybody in the space. So anybody in your listening audience that is not personally investing in real estate is just making a huge error because it is a game changer. And to kind of put that in perspective, I'm sure you guys have talked about this, but if you're making 500 grand a year that you're paying taxes on, you're getting absolutely crushed by the IRS, probably paying 37% plus for your federal, and then you got your state taxes as well. So you're probably in the 50% range. If you were investing, call it 100 grand a year into passive investments and taking those passive losses of between $40,000 and $70,000 a year and applying to your active income, like that has significant impact on your tax liability at the end of the year. And by just doing that alone, you're saving potentially $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in taxes a year that you can then reinvest back into more real estate, which is just that over time mushrooms. And it's just, the numbers are humongous if you put that in an Excel sheet over any amount of time at all. So sorry, like
you were on point and then you're preaching to the choir and I talk about it a lot, but it's,
yeah,
you're saying perfectly. Continue.
Yeah. I was a high income W-2 guy. like paying my 37% plus my 8% Arizona, like I'm in the high 40s. Like every dollar I make, I'm giving 50% of it away. And then last year, because I left my W-2 and I became a real estate professional and I had $500,000 in passive losses chasing me because I could not apply that to my active income. Last year, like I won't pay a dime in taxes.
Yeah.
And I made as much as I ever made as a W-2 guy. So my livable wage actually increased the year that I left my job.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. Good for you.
Like, let that sink in, listeners, right? Like, I left a job. I only worked for half of a year, and my take-home pay was significantly higher than I had ever made before.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'm not a CPA. Check with your CPA. I'm not giving tax advice, legal advice, all that other stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a game changer. Like, game changer.
I'm going to kind of go into detail. I don't want to take too much time on this, but
yeah,
what you just said, all right, so you had passive losses that were chasing you because you had invested passively and these operators had probably done a cost ex strategy on their property.
Yep.
They accelerated the depreciation. And if you are not a real estate professional, there's only a few things that you can use those losses toward, right? It's usually passive income that is generated.
Yep.
Again, I'm not a CPA either. Talk to your CPA.
Yeah.
But that's what Randy's talking about when he said he had passive losses chasing him. They just stuck with him until he was able to use them. I don't know if those ever fall off. You know, does that just...
They don't.
Okay. So then finally, when you had the real estate professional status, you can take 100% of those losses against your active income.
Yep.
Or any income, right? So
yep.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Good for you.
And to boot, I sold all those single family homes and I thought I was going to pay huge capital gains on that.
Yeah.
But that wiped it out as well.
Wiped it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
It was a good year. Yeah. Yeah. It really was. It really was fun. So Anyway.
We talk about this as well. The market's evolving and changing. You got into the multifamily space at a pretty opportune time. And so what are you seeing now? And what do you think where's your crystal ball? How are you operating? You guys taking down deals still? Mm-hmm. Are you kind of waiting to see?
Yeah. I have two partners that I work with. Two would consider like two of the very best operators in the United States in the multifamily space. And I'm about to launch a fund with a short-term rental technology company. I can't say this one because it's 506C, but TechVestor. We're going to be buying 150 plus single family homes this year at a discount because of what's going on with the interest rates.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are absolutely deals out there. I think it's more important today than ever before to make sure that you're putting those dollars with good operators that have track records, that have probably more importantly, even than track record over the last few years, is that they have infrastructure and they have the businesses in place that can support some of the challenges that we are going to face in the coming years because of this economic turmoil that we're walking through right now. So I saw this in my years in corporate America where I was meeting with small business owners during the last downturn, and the small players that were over leveraged, that didn't have the systems and the process and the infrastructure in place, they got absolutely annihilated in 2008, 2009. And we're going to see the same thing again. The mom and pop operators that spent their 50 grand with a mentor to learn how to become a syndicator in a box. I don't think that's a good place to have your dollars today, personally. I think the people that have years and years of experience and have large organizations behind them supporting them is the best place to do it. So this floating rate debt that is out there that some people did not get fixed rate or did not get caps on, I think is going to create tremendous opportunities for the good players out there. And I think it's going to really, really hurt some of those smaller guys and the investors that invested in those deals in the past. So
yeah,
that's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. What do you have a time horizon there?
Yeah.
Like, are you looking at trip data? Are you looking at any of this stuff, looking, hunting and pecking? Or obviously you're going with operators that are doing that kind of work, I guess. But have they indicated to you when they think that there's going to be even better opportunities? Most likely the multifamily space. Let's stick with that asset class.
Yeah. So I think the opportunity is going to come at the moment when we see the Fed pause interest rates, and that moment, like when that first decrease is announced, whether that's 6 months, 9 months, 2 years, 10 years, whenever that is, like that will be the moment. We're going to see a flood of properties hit the market again because cap rates will start to compress again. And you will see all the capital that's sitting on the sidelines flow into the space as well. So what I don't know is a lot of people would think that that's when the prices will start going back up. But I think this flood of money that will come back into the market will probably keep prices very similar to where they are prior to it, just because you'll have competing forces for those dollars. So I don't know. When is that going to be? I think with everything that's going on, depending on when this is going to be aired, gosh, 2 weeks from now could be a very different world than it is today with some of the announcements we're likely to hear. And
yeah,
with everything going on the banking institutions this past week, it's...
Yeah, I was just hearing about Silicon Valley Bank and the potential for other issues. I was reading some things today. Just it could lead to no interest rate hike, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be a problem if they raise again in 2 weeks.
Yep.
And so, yeah, either a quarter or nothing. Yeah, that's my hypothesis. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like,
yep,
if they go higher than that, it seems like it could be cause more problems in the banking system. So,
and I don't know, though, that if they pause today, I don't know if this will be the end of it.
Sure.
Like, I think it's possible if they pause and don't do any more increases today, a few months down the road or 6 months down the road, they could go back to increasing again if ultimately that's what the economy is driving. So there's an important time period here now as we navigate this banking situation that's going on, whether this will have long-term impacts or whether it'll just be a little blip and we're going to continue on our path. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Kind of wait and see type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about a lot of the deals that I had looked at on the multifamily side and trying to make a number of them make sense and pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And with the new, I guess the new rates, a lot of them have not.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you seeing that is working on the multifamily side? Is it heavy lift value add where you're going in doing a lot of forced appreciation, or are you guys buying some stabilized and they're ready to go without, but you're not getting large rent increases? What do you guys look at?
Yeah, it really depends. I have one partner who is holding true to his past year strategies, which is class C plus B minus value add, $200 to $300 to $500 a month increases. There's this huge loss to lease that's still sitting on almost everything that's out there today because the rates were going up so fast.
Yep.
So even without doing renovations, you can raise rents pretty quickly. We're not seeing occupancy start to dip yet. So I feel pretty safe with that in the market where that's operating. But the more conservative dollars, I think, are actually flocking towards higher quality, B plus, A minus, lighter value add business plans. And I think that's a safer bet, more conservative bet, but the returns are going to be lower on that as well. So it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I've got full confidence in both of my operators. They're slightly different business plans, but the real key is what kind of debt are they getting on these deals? And how confident are that they can complete their business plans in the timelines that they are projecting? And a new operator doesn't show up and do 150 renovations in a year. It just, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody who's renovated 3,000 units over the last 2 years, I feel pretty comfortable that they can do that. So the increasing NOI can help offset any fluctuations we see in the cap rates that might occur in the next couple of years. So,
yeah. All right. So the last couple of things we've talked are kind of like, oh man, gloom and doom almost, but let's talk. What are you most excited about in 2023? Like, what are you looking forward to the most? Is it the fund that you guys are working on? What is it?
Yeah. So it's the multifamily space, just rinse and repeat, keep moving those dollars back into more deals. I think now is a better time to buy assets than last summer is, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Under the current environment, if you could make these things pencil, it's a better deal today than it was with floating rate debt before. I am really excited about the short-term rental space. I think we're going to continue to see a push towards this mobile work environment that can move all over the country and take advantage of what the short-term rental space offers. I think as a whole, as I always fall back on, I'm very positive and excited about working with excellent operators. And if you continue to partner with those types of folks, I think you're going to be safe. And diversification is a good thing, regardless of where you're at in the market. So I think spreading your dollars across multiple operators, multiple deals, multiple asset classes, I think is a great strategy. So,
yeah, fantastic. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you real fast. I know we're coming to the end of the show, but you've got a podcast up there. I can see it's The Gentle Art of Crushing It. So can you tell me about that and what you guys cover?
Yeah. So I am a co-host on The Gentle Art of Crushing It. We're actually a 3-day-a-week podcast. I think we do Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I handle the Thursday passive investing edition. And we focus solely on educating and inspire the new passive investor. My other co-hosts cover all kinds of different topics of mindset and different asset classes, self-storage, long-term rentals, fix and flip, mindset. It's just a really great group of folks talking about the stuff we love to talk about. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I've met a lot of really, really neat people in that space. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's great having these conversations, getting to know people like yourself and just having high level conversations and learning from each other. So
yeah,
go check out The Gentle Art of Crushing It. Randy Smith, he's got it going Thursdays. So
love it.
Hey, before we go, I just want to ask you a couple questions just to wrap up. What is your favorite pastime not related to business? Get to know Randy.
Favorite pastime? So that's fluctuating. I spent a lot of time doing triathlons.
All right.
And I'm still doing that a little bit, but not competing anymore. So I love to do anything outdoors. Yeah. Swim, bike, run, skiing. I love spending time with family. Really, that's it.
Yeah. Great.
And traveling. I guess we've done a lot of traveling. Went to Spain last year. That was a lot of fun. And working for a large bank, I'm kind of a points junkie.
Oh, nice.
So I play the points game, and my wife and I were able to fly to Spain in the first class lay down seats, absolutely free, which is, you just can't beat it. So
nice. You following the points guy, or there's a guy on the, yeah, man, we're on there.
Oh yeah.
We're getting free this and that, get the right card. Charge it up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's connect after. I'll teach you some tricks. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. I'm all about it. Like, where should we put this on so we can get something out of it?
Yeah.
What's the best thing or memory that's happened to you and your family in the last 60 days, recent memory?
Yeah. So I went skiing with my daughter up in Oregon and we only get to go probably once, maybe twice a year because she lives in Oregon. I live here in Phoenix. And we just had a fantastic day on the slopes. It was so much fun. It was beautiful out. Just cold enough to keep the snow fluffy, but warm enough that we weren't freezing. And
yeah,
we created some really neat memories.
Yeah, very nice. That got to get out and do the snow. I've never been to Oregon to ski. We do ours typically in Utah or in the Breckenridge area. But yeah,
nice.
Good for you guys. And name one or two people that have been most influential to the way you think or your success.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I hear that question a lot, like, what is the one most influential person in your life? And actually, I really enjoyed a lot of the books by Dan Sullivan and Darren Hardy. Mm-hmm. Have been kind of game changers for me. The Who Not How was a big one. Personality Isn't Perfect. So I've really enjoyed those guys. I think it's a good mix between like the business leader who understands process and then the psychologist who brings in the mindset piece into it. I just think it's a really impactful duo that presents just amazing content. So I would say those two.
Yeah.
And I've had some really influential family members around me as well that have had, my dad owned apartments in Los Angeles County. He was a sheriff for LA County Sheriff's Department. And I got to see him. I kind of have a rich dad, poor dad scenario in my background. So mom and stepdad were entrepreneurs, but they worked their fingers to the bone, but retired not well off. My dad had the sheriff's job and owned apartments and got to live the life that I wanted to live. So I would say them as well.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, Randy. It was great to have you on. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and your information. And I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of it. So thanks for coming on the show. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Yeah, thank you, Randall.
Surprisingly, most of the agents we speak with got into real estate hoping to gain passive income and become work optional. However, only 1 in 5 ever start investing. Most are simply too afraid to start. Once you get educated by listening to this show, you'll be able to overcome that fear and become the 1 in 5 who are finding financial freedom. Don't miss a single episode. If you want to stay up to date, the best way is to make sure you're subscribed. So if you haven't done that, go ahead and do it now. And we'll catch you on the next episode.